Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. My name is Marcus Freestone. I hope you're all doing reasonably well out there, given the current global apocalypse that's going on. I'm not going to talk about the politics of it anymore because it just depresses me. We're going to be in this situation for the foreseeable future, so let's all just be positive and help each other get through it. Small piece of admin stroke plug first. I've made some changes to the Patreon account. Instead of three tiers, there is now only one. It's $3 a month. For that, you get the aforementioned free album, which you got a taste of a couple of episodes ago, the weekly blog, and extra episodes. It's $3 a month for everything. So if you could consider signing up for that, that would be fantastic. And if you could actually do it rather than just considering it, that would be even better. That would be fantastic plus. That's a bit Clockwork Orange. Never mind. Okay, on this the episode. Over the next few weeks, I'm going to be doing some episodes on matters of psychology, philosophy and mental health that will hopefully help us all to get through this current state of affairs. I'm going to talk about solitude, something that I have a lot of experience about, but it was always voluntary. You know, we've got involuntary celibates, now we've got involuntary solitude. God, that's hard to say. This episode, I thought I would do the long-promised episode on dreams and sleep, because in this current climate, getting a good night's sleep is more important than ever. And if you're not engaging in your usual work schedule or outdoor physical activities, then sleeping is going to be even more of a problem than normal. So I think we're going to see people who've normally had no problem sleeping developing forms of insomnia to varying degrees. So I think this episode is even more pertinent than it would have been a couple of weeks ago. So I'm going to start by going through some of an article I found on New Scientist. This is from 2 years ago. The title is, "We've Started to Uncover the True Purpose of Dreams." For the first time, researchers have got evidence that dreams help soothe the impact of emotional events in our lives, acting like overnight therapy. And this is something that I have thought for the last 25 years. It's something I've experienced. There's the old, it may be an old wives' tale, to use a very old-fashioned phrase. If you have a problem, sleep on it. And I think it's been known for a very long time that the subconscious brain does a lot. In fact, the brain is more active when you're asleep than when you're awake, which may seem perverse and counterintuitive, but it's true. So I've known that for a long time, but now we're getting actual scientific validation to push this further. So the article continues, "Dreaming really does help us process our memories and come to terms with our daily lives. That might sound uncontroversial, but we have never had clear evidence that this is the case until now. The finding raises the prospect of hacking our dreams to boost learning, memory, and emotional well-being." Mark Blagrove at Swansea University in the UK, that's not too far away from Cardiff, where I am, and his colleagues have found that the emotional strength of the experiences we have when we are awake is linked to the content of our dreams and the intensity of our dreaming brainwaves. Again, through personal experience, I've known this for many years, but it's great to have actual empirical scientific data to back it up. The team asked student volunteers to keep a detailed diary of their daily lives for 10 days, logging the main things they had done, any personally significant events, and any major concerns or worries they had. Where appropriate, the students noted any accompanying emotion and scored it for intensity. On the evening of the 10th day, the volunteers slept in the dream lab while wearing an EEG cap that measured their brainwaves. Each person was woken during REM sleep and if they had been dreaming, a report of the dream was recorded. The team then compared the content of such dreams with the daily logs, looking for links. During REM sleep, electrical activity in the brain oscillates at a frequency between 4 and 7 Hz, generating a type of brainwave known as theta waves. The team found that the intensity of a person's theta waves was positively correlated with the number of diary items that appeared in their dreams. So that's very interesting. So obviously it makes sense that you will often dream about things that have happened to you that day. Not all the time, and often they're masked in sort of metaphor, which we'll get onto later on. But you'll usually find that something you've experienced during the previous day will be mixed up in your dreams, even if it's only sort of recognisable to you, and you have to interpret the metaphorical content of your dream. You'll see that it's influenced by your recent thoughts from that day. The researchers also discovered that events that had a higher emotional impact were more likely to become incorporated into a person's dreams than blander, more neutral experiences. Together, these findings suggest that the most intense dreaming activity occurs when our brains are working hard to process recent, emotionally powerful experiences. So we found, finally, there is actually a brain mechanism for this process. The team has previously found that theta activity is higher in people who have frequent nightmares. It might be that such people put more brain effort into processing their emotions and experiences during dreaming. We've known for a while that one of the purposes of dreams is to consolidate memory storage, which is a very intense process that I've talked about in previous episodes and in the books as well. Just a brief recap that all memories are filed away in your subconscious digital neuronal electrochemical filing system, but they're not all given equal weight. The brain will flag certain memories and experiences as more important than others. And because of the ancient sort of fight or flight mechanism, it often, unfortunately, gives a more prominent flag to negative experiences and memories than positive ones, which goes into the whole sort of cycle of depression, that when you're depressed, negative memories recur to you more often, then you're having more negative thoughts. And then when you go to sleep that night, your subconscious brain will just be filing away more negativity, and you get into this vicious cycle that's hard to break. So we've known that for a while, but now to also have scientific empiric validation that not only do dreams consolidate memories, but they are actually doing what I've suspected for years, which is processing and working through difficult emotional content and consolidating that as well. The practical upshot of all this for all of us in our daily lives is that every night when we go to sleep, our brain is consolidating these negative memories. And so if you are a person who doesn't get enough REM sleep, who doesn't have enough dream time, whose brain doesn't spend enough time each night performing this vital memory and emotional consolidation process, then you are literally not working through cognitively your emotional stresses, and they'll still be with you the next day. And if you have a prolonged period of lack of REM sleep, which I have had most of my life, then this thing becomes a vicious cycle and it snowballs. And what's the word I'm looking for? Exponential, that's it. If you go for a long period without sufficient REM sleep, then there will be an exponential snowballing, an increase in the negative memories that are still with you the next day. And therefore, this will increase over time and become an increasing problem. This also confirms a theory I've had for 20 years or more, which is that the more dreams that you are aware of having, and in fact, I'm, as a side note, I'm often aware that I'm dreaming while I'm asleep. I'm in a dream and I can say to myself, oh yeah, this is a dream. And sometimes it's a recurring dream and I go, oh yeah, I know what happens next. And then I consciously act out in the dream what I remember happening from the last time the dream happened. I don't know if that's a common thing or that's just one of the many perverse aspects of my my uniquely peculiar brain. But anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, so I've long had this theory, which has now been confirmed by this study and others, that if you can remember on the days when you wake up and you can remember, oh, I had a lot of intense dreams last night, that means that your brain has been doing a large amount of work. And I personally see that as a positive thing rather than a negative thing. I don't think, oh, I've had lots of dreams, that means I've had a lot of negative shit to deal with the previous day or whatever. To me, when you have a lot of dreams that you can remember and they're intense, it means that your brain is working overtime to purge and consolidate those negative memories and work through them. And hopefully, it doesn't explicitly say in the article, but for me, thinking about it now, I think what this study indicates is that if your brain is doing this overworking, this, not overworking, if your brain is doing a high level of this memory and emotional consolidation, for me that's a positive thing, because I think that it indicates that when those emotional negative memories are stored away in your memory, because your dreaming REM sleep brain has worked through them to such a high degree, that when they're stored away, the flag attached with them will not be as negative as it would be if your brain hadn't done this sleeping subconscious consolidation process. So sleeping is not only vital for your physical health, but it's vital for your mental health in many respects, but in this precise respect, that if you don't get enough dream and REM sleep, then you are going to have a lot more negative, toxic memories that are going to be with you during the daytime. And again, this can be an excellent, this can be a 1, 2, 3, an exponential, I'm not going to use that word again, process. I'm going to say snowballing. It's going to be a snowballing process that will increase over time. So really, if you can't remember a lot of long, intense dreams, or you're not aware of them while you're having them, then to me that indicates that, well, maybe it indicates that you don't have any particular negative emotional content to work through that day. So it could mean, hey, you're perfectly mentally healthy. Or it could mean you do have this negative emotional content, but your brain isn't dealing with it. So, as I said previously when I trailed this episode, I use my dreams as an index of my general mental health and how efficient this process of memory and emotional consolidation is functioning. So I very often wake up having had some very intense dreams, and years ago that used to worry me, thinking, oh dear, my brain's got a lot to work through. But no, I think this study demonstrates that it's a positive, it's an entirely positive thing. It means, yes, your brain has a lot to work through, but intense dreams indicate that it's done it. Job done. And so you should feel better after a good night's dreaming, not worse. And furthermore, if you are having intense dreams about specific past events in your life, then that is also a positive thing, even if those dreams can be nightmarish and remind you of unpleasant things. To me, that's also entirely positive, because it indicates that your brain has worked through those past negative events during the night, and having dreamed of them, you should now be free of them in your conscious waking life. So this is a very positive study. I say that was 2 years ago. I'll do a bit more research and see if there have been any follow-up studies and if there's any further information. But to me, that's an entirely positive factor in human psychology, that we can use our sleep and our REM sleep and our dreams that we can remember. We can use them as an index of our mental health and how well our brain is doing in its task of emotional consolidation. So I've just found another article here on a site called sleepopolis.com called A Purpose of Dreams. I'll just finish this section with a brief synopsis of this. The purpose of dreams has been a subject of speculation for thousands of years. Aristotle believed that dreams occurred because of residual movements of sensory organs, while Freud theorized that dreams were a manifestation of repressed desires. Many of these early theories of dreams were disproved by the discovery of REM sleep in the 1950s. Several theories of dreams have emerged over the last four decades. Unlike early theories of dreams, newer theories are supported by substantial research, brain imaging, and other important advances in sleep science. Originally called the activation synthesis theory, the AIM theory of dreaming was developed by J. Allen Hobson in 1978. He believed that dreams have a neurobiological explanation that originates with basic reproductive and survival functions. According to Hobson, dreams occur when the cerebral cortex attempts to make sense of activity originating from more primitive areas of the brain during sleep. Because the release of neurotransmitters and other activity continues during sleep, so does stimulation to the brain. Though large parts of the brain are deactivated during sleep, basic functions such as signal processing do not switch off. The AIM theory was a direct repudiation of Freud's theory that dreams represented repressed desires and had a strong psychological basis. Hobson argues that dreams are not psychological in nature, but an attempt by the forebrain to create a narrative from essential neurobiological processes. So again, that ties in with the previous article in New Scientist, that it is the brain consolidating our lives and, yes, creating a narrative for us. It's a way of us to understand in more palatable terms or more understandable terms things that have, I think, from what I'm taking from this is, because our emotional brain is reptilian, it's billions of years old, we, as you'll know if you heard the Gurdjieff and Ouspensky episode from a few years ago, because our emotional brain is so ancient in evolutionary terms, it's often difficult to articulate your emotions, as can be evidenced by me having trouble articulating that last sentence. So we all know it's difficult to express your emotions linguistically to other people or even to yourself in your own head. So I think what this other article on sleepopolis.com is showing is that another part of the process, the subconscious processes that go on during REM and dream sleep, is that the brain is translating into our consciousness the primitive subconscious emotional events of the previous day. Yes, I think that works. Yes, that makes sense to me. So this is another function of dreams which ties in with the previous article. Okay, so what happens if you don't get enough sleep? Thank you. There is, well, there is one famous case from 1959 that I saw an excellent documentary on about 20 years ago, and it's fascinated me ever since. You may or may not have heard of Peter Tripp, but if you haven't, this is going to be fascinating. Peter Tripp was, at the time, pretty famous in America. He had a show on New York radio, and he was the guy who invented the top 40. So he was a really big deal in the emerging pop music and rock and roll at the time in the late 50s, early 60s. He went on to be controversial for other reasons, but we'll leave that for another time. So basically what he did, in order to raise money for a charity called March of Dimes, he hosted a live radio show from a glass booth in the middle of Times Square, and he stayed awake for what at the time was the world record, 200 hours. That's about 8 days. He stayed awake for 8 days continuously while broadcasting music from this sort of booth that people could go. It was a publicity thing for a charity, essentially. All doctors and medical personnel who heard about this strongly advised him not to do it. They said nobody's ever stayed awake for this long before. It's highly dangerous. But since he was adamant and determined that he was going to do it anyway, even against medical advice, doctors thought, well, since he's going to do it anyway, we might as well make use of this situation and conduct a proper medical study on him. So when I say he stayed awake for 200 hours, 8.5 days, whatever, he stayed awake for 200 hours because the doctors said, well, if he's going to do this, we'll make sure he actually does it. So they had a team of doctors watching him 24 hours a day, and they wouldn't even let him close his eyes for 10 seconds or go to the toilet on his own because he would fall asleep. So they actually participated in the process of keeping him awake. So he was properly awake for 8 days. And after about three days, he basically became psychotic. I think my record is 50 hours for staying awake in a period of hypomania, but I found that a very positive thing. I got tons of work done. I made lots of music. I did lots of writing and I felt brilliant. But I think I was just on the cusp of, in fact, when I forced myself to go to sleep for a few hours after 50 hours awake because I was starting to seriously lose my mind and it was becoming, I was becoming a physical danger to myself. I did start to have mild hallucinations and not know where I was or what was going on. And if I'd left my home in that state, obviously that could have been really bad. And one of the things Peter Tripp did during this study after a few days was a doctor or somebody came in and he thought they were an undertaker come to bury him. He thought he was dead. So he ran screaming out of the booth and ran into the traffic in the middle of Times Square, was almost run over. And the doctors had to go out and drag him back in. But he had all sorts of hallucinations. He saw spiders in his shoes. He saw people as monsters, as the Grim Reaper. I mean, all sorts of things. And yeah, it was generally not a good thing. People have since broke that record, and I think since that time, it's not something I've ever experienced or had any interest in, but I have heard tales of people staying awake for 2 weeks at a time on speed and various other drugs, but that's not something that personally interests me. But at the time, this was the world record, 200 hours, and so they kept him awake for that time. They studied him. He had serious psychological problems, became wildly psychotic and hallucinations and almost schizophrenic. And at the end of the 8 days, he slept for 24 hours solid, and they monitored him with EEGs and that, and he woke up and he seemed back to normal. But over the long term, this kind of ruined his life. His marriage broke up. He started behaving oddly, antisocially. His wife left him. I don't think he ever saw his kids again. He lost his job with the radio station because of erratic behaviour. And the controversial thing I mentioned was that some of you older people in America may be familiar with the term payola. This was a big scandal in the mid-60s where it was illegal for record companies to pay money or to give gifts to induce DJs to play their records on the radio more than anyone else's. I mean, now I'm sure it's not illegal and it happens all the bloody time, but it was a big thing back then. And Peter Tripp was one of the people working on another radio station who was caught up in this. He was found to have taken, I think, I don't know, $3,000 or something. I mean, you know, a massive amount of money at the time to play certain records over other ones. And he became disgraced. And I think it ended his career. So this stunt, it may have raised a lot of money and attention for this charity, but it essentially ruined his life. So if you're thinking, I don't know why you would be, but if you're thinking, oh, this current situation of solitude and isolation, this is an opportunity. Hey, why not have a party? Why not stay awake for a few days and make the most of it? Don't. It will ruin your life. So sleep is exceedingly important for all those reasons I've outlined. Okay, that's about enough for this episode. Please check out marcusfreestone.com. Please consider forking out $3 a month for Patreon, for the album, the blog, and the extra episode, which I should be recording shortly, and other treats as well. And I think I will do a bit more on sleep in the next episode. I'm hoping to record an episode over the next few days with my girlfriend because she works in the health and fitness industry. And at the moment, she is stuck at home because all her centres where she works have been closed. All her classes are cancelled. And she is having to exercise at home because she normally goes training every day. So I think that would be very useful. I know a lot of you will be missing the gym, although personally I haven't been near a gym since I was 15 when I was in school, which if you saw a full-length photo of me, you could tell that I'm 48 and I clearly haven't been in a gym for 30 years. But anyway, I know that's a problem for some people. Here in Wales, in Britain, at the moment, the current situation is you are still allowed to go out for a walk and get exercise if you are on your own or with one other person that you live with. But other than that, yeah, it's kind of a police state, which I'm trying not to get too angry about. So basically, my girlfriend and I, we are only seeing each other. She can't see her sister because she currently has pneumonia. So yeah, it's all a bit screwy really. But anyway, hopefully that will happen in the next few days, and stay positive, look after yourselves. Please contact me via Twitter, Facebook, or email. Go to the website, positive thing, 1, 2, 3. Go to the website, marcusfreestone.com/positive thinking and the meaning of life, all one word, for links to the Twitter, Facebook, and email. Send me some messages. What do you want me to talk about? You know, this is your podcast. I don't want to just sit here talking to myself, although literally I am, but I know there are a number of people listening. So let me know what you want to talk about. I'm going to do some episodes on solitude and isolation because I have a lot of experience of doing that voluntarily. So yeah, let's all band together and get ourselves through this current shitty state of the world. So stay positive. Look after yourselves. Don't cough on other people. Don't be selfish and buy up all the toilet paper. I'm sure people listening to this show aren't going to do that. But yeah, look after yourselves, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.